Welcome to Horror Makes Us Happy, the podcast where we ask the question, what is it about horror that makes us happy? Your hosts are Steve Becker and myself, Chris Whitman, and you can find out more about us at our website, horrormakesushappy.com. Before we get started, this is the trigger warning. This is a horror podcast, so we talk about horror things, and we could delve into sensitive subjects, including foul language and or abuse or other things. But it's not necessarily all about that. It's actually more of an interesting psychological delve into what exactly it is that people enjoy and like about horror. And we do have to mention that just because it is a possibility. So if that is not your cup of tea, go listen to something boring. Mm. But if it is, welcome to the show. And Steve, what do we got coming up?
Let's see. We've got about 10 people on the guest list, so we're not going to go through all that. On the website, again, horrormakesushappy.com, we've got a Linktree link to all the different socials and also a link to our Discord server. We do 3 events weekly on Discord. There's also links to Chris's webcomic and my book. Chris's webcomic is piecesofflesh.com, and my book is A Guide to the Recovery Toolbox, which you can get on Amazon and a couple other locations. Again, links to those on the Linktree page. But today we're talking to Amir Mouini, a horror director, also has worked with marketing departments for places like Fangoria and Netflix. Welcome.
Thank you. Excited to be here.
Our pleasure. Before we get into the meat of the interview, you want to let us know what you're currently working on?
Yeah, I just wrapped directing my first television episode for a TV series called Subliminal. So that will be premiering later in the year, and it's on a streaming service called Nebula.
So. Cool. Nice. We love all things subliminal and liminal.
Yes. let's see. So it's been a little while since we talked about this. So just briefly, the theme of this interview will be less about your work and more about your fan of the genre. Mm-hmm. We go through your childhood, teenage years, and then adulthood. And then at the end, we'll talk about any common themes that have cropped up multiple times and see if there's anything there that connects specifically with the horror genre. But that said, it's not meant to be a therapy session. So if there's anything that you don't want to answer, you just say pass and we'll move on. But starting with childhood, what are some of your earliest memories of scary things?
Definitely one of my first memories of a horror movie that I watched was, I think Psycho was on the television and I was kind of sneak watching it from the sidelines. And I do remember when they showed his mother in the chair as a skeleton. I was probably like 4 or 5 when I saw that, and that like really scared me. And I consumed a lot of horror as a kid, as I started to get into like 2nd, 3rd, 4th, and 5th grade. And I think I started to develop this irrational fear that someone was going to come into the house and try to kill. Like, I was always really nervous at night. So I think even though I loved watching horror movies, in particular slashers, I also think it gave me nightmares and trauma as I was younger.
Understandable. Yeah. Especially definitely. Since that does happen in real life. So there's that.
Yeah. Other than just psycho. To comment on the psycho thing, that the mother skeleton was pretty horrific for the time. It was very detailed and graphic.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Any other media jump out to you as memorable from those years?
I used to watch the X-Files a lot, especially with my dad. And there was one episode that I think it took place somewhere in like the Midwest where it was almost like a wrong turn plot. They were kind of like inbred monsters, and that episode terrified me. So
yeah, I vaguely recall that one.
Yeah, I remember that one was like really scary.
Let's see. So Psycho was main thing was the scene with the mother in the chair. Any other scenes pop out to you from that?
Not that, but I also, one of the movies that terrified me the most as a kid was called Dolls. From 1987-88, and there's a scene where the woman is kind of like in the corner in the dark, and she finds her friend, and then her eyes fall out of her eye sockets and roll to the ground. And that movie traumatized me. I remember like I had nightmares all the time about that. I was terrified of dolls. So that one like definitely left an impression.
Okay.
And I recently rewatched it as an adult and I was like, this scared me. Like that one.
Yeah.
But like looking back, I was like, I don't know why this terrified me so much.
There are a few that I've rewatched like that. Like this was scary. Okay.
Yeah. So those are probably the 3 things I think in my childhood that really scarred me. And also Return of Oz. I don't know if anyone remembers that movie. It was like a sequel to The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, that one's come up a few times. The Wheelers.
Yep. The Wheelies or Wheelers, yeah. And the woman who like kept all the heads. And that movie, like actually rewatching that one, I was like, this is actually pretty fucked up. Like they do like electroshock. It's kind of a controversial Disney movie, I would say.
Yeah. But let's see. You mentioned, so we also have a question about scary dreams or recurring nightmares. The one for dolls that covers that. Yep. Did you have any other scary dreams or recurring dreams other than that?
I used to, as a kid, always like be chased by a train. And it was really loud and aggressive, and it would like come through my bedroom. And I think there was some animated movie where that happens. I think it was like something Nemo, Adventures of Nemo, Little Nemo. I don't know. But there was some like Japanese-based anime film that had a sequence like that. And yeah, I would have this nightmare over and over again of this train chasing me. It only happened when I was a kid. It doesn't happen anymore. So
Okay. Yeah. Was there ever a time in your childhood when you were terrified of something in real life?
Yeah. So there was a place called George's. I grew up in Massachusetts. So, you know, New England summers, going to places like Nantucket, Martha's Vineyard, Cape Cod. Back then it wasn't glamorous the way I feel like it's gotten really rich and bougie now, but it was more just like mini golf and soft serve ice cream and whatever. So we took this ferry to a place called George's Island. And I don't exactly know where it is in relation, but it's an island off of the coast of Massachusetts. And there was always this rumor of a woman called the Lady in Black. And supposedly it was a woman who like lost her husband in the war, and she was always mourning and always wearing black. And even after she passed, her ghost haunts George's Island. And me and all my cousins were there with my mom. And we found this like really dark tunnel. And to this day, we swear that we saw a woman wearing all black at the end of the tunnel. And I remember like all three of us screamed and ran away. And it was like so scary at the time. I think we were probably like 5 or 6. But I also think of, you know, like, who knows if we actually saw it or not, but we thought we did. And it was really scary.
I was looking at pictures of the island, and I think I found the exact tunnel you're talking about. Is there a wooden bridge just before it?
Yeah, I think so, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, this place looks
crazy. I haven't been back since that happened. Not because I was scared, but just, I don't know, like I've never been back. So maybe I'm due for a visit to go see her again.
Yeah.
I'll bring a Ouija board this time.
Yes, that's a good idea.
Be funny if somebody had intentionally like drawn or, you know, put some sort of a picture of a woman at the end of the tunnel just to fuck with people.
Like a cardboard cutout.
Exactly. Right.
Here, kids, don't look down this tunnel.
That's funny. Yeah, that's probably like the one that stands out to me the most. I haven't had too many like paranormal activity situations happen to me ever, but I also think I like never opened that door to, I kind of feel like once you let it in, it starts to happen more. So I've always just like respected it, but have like ignored it at the same time. So
yeah, understand. That's safe.
Yeah.
Was there anybody in your family who were fans of horror?
Yes. My grandmother loved horror, and she's actually the one who introduced it to me. Oh, okay. So I would sleep over their house probably like once a month as a kid. And we would always go to Blockbuster and pick out like 2 or 3 horror movies and get candy and other things. And it was kind of like a tradition. And I would always come back having nightmares, and my mom and dad would be really pissed that she let me watch.
That's awesome.
Friday the 13th when I was like 7 years old. So.
Oh my God.
What did we tell you?
Yeah. So
no candy, like, no horror movies.
My relationship to horror is actually like very closely aligned to my relationship to her, and we were very close. So yeah, as I'm like directing and doing all these projects, I kind of feel like she's like looking down, and she's like, I knew one day this would happen. So
yeah. That is fantastic. I love how many of our guests are influenced by a grandparent with horror. Like, it's just crazy to me, because I grew up with, you know, the typical grandparents just, you know, give candies and stuff, and you go see them on the weekends, and If anything, my influence was like an older sibling or maybe my mom going to the video store. But yeah, we've talked to quite a few people that are just like, yeah, my grandmother was awesome. She showed me The Exorcist when I was six. Like, okay.
Yeah, my grandmother was a bartender and also claimed she was a witch.
There it is. Oh, and a witch. Okay.
And she like dropped out of high school and ran off with her like high school sweetheart. She was kind of a rebel. And I remember we had this like show and tell, or it wasn't show and tell, but it was something in kindergarten where you like talk about your grandparents and he's like, oh, my grandma likes to knit. And I was like, my grandma's a bartender and a witch. And the teacher was like, okay.
Moving on. You either became very popular or very outcast at the same time.
I think I've always been somewhat of an outcast, and I'm okay with that. So,
Let's see. Some of our guests have reported that there was sort of a dividing line where prior to this dividing line, horror scared them, and then after the dividing line, it was pleasure. Was there such a dividing line for you, or was it always enjoyment?
I think I always loved it, to be honest. Like, I think of like gateway horror, which to me was like, Are You Afraid of the Dark and Goosebumps. And growing up, I read like, you know, Goosebumps followed by Fear Street and then all the Christopher Pike novels. Mm-hmm. And like I was a big, big reader as well. And so I think I just like naturally eased into the horror genre across like book and film and television even. And I loved every minute of it. So, yeah.
So I thought you were going to say that your grandmother had kind of jump-started you by dumping you into the deep end first so that this other stuff didn't really seem all that bad to you.
No. I think I always loved it. I don't know. And I never have like reflected or analyzed why I do, but there's just something about the genre that brings me so much like joy and peace, which is so weird, but I really do love it.
Nice.
So actually that's a follow-up question to when we ask if there was something you were terrified in real life, then we also usually like to ask if there was a time in your childhood when you felt exceptionally calm or safe or at bliss.
Yeah. I mean like literally the horror section at a Blockbuster. Like,
nice.
I loved going to a video store and I just remember combing through the aisles. I remember all the key art of the boxes. I actually recently like bought a TV with a built-in VCR player and like I have two shelves with all VHS tapes and on the top of it says like video headquarters. Like I'm almost like recreating that like nostalgic sense of like safety.
I was just thinking that like as we were talking a minute ago about, you know, the work you've done with the like Netflix and Fangoria, I was thinking to myself, I wonder if he's like rebuilding a Blockbuster in his den with like I'm sure you can go on eBay.
Yeah. If I had a room, I would have a whole like bedroom dedicated to that. But because I live in a one bedroom, it's unfortunately just two shelves. But one day that's the dream. So
future plans.
Yeah.
Let's see. Okay. So another pair of questions that we have here that we will start with the negative. So we get a non-positive. Do you remember the first person you hurt?
First person that I hurt?
Physically or emotionally?
I was like, yeah, are we talking physical, emotional?
Yeah, either one. Whatever comes to mind first.
That's a hard one. Let me think on that for a second. I mean, probably like when I was a kid and I got into a fight with my mom, I might have like said something, you know, like, I hate you or something like that, where like, I'm sure it hurt her to hear that. So probably something with like my mom or dad, like just pulling a tantrum as a kid and saying something like that.
Right. And you get the talk about the word hate and how powerful it is and you shouldn't use it.
Yeah. Like I think you obviously don't mean it when you say it as a kid, you're not aware, but I would imagine if you like brought a child into the world and sacrificed so much and then it's like they're 8 years old and they say that probably doesn't feel good. So.
So to end on the positive, do you remember the first person you helped?
I think I was always a problem solver with like friends or family, and I still am to this day. Like I'm not the best person to lean on for emotional support, but like I will have like a scroll with plan A, B, and C of like how we can fix things. Like I'm very much like a fixer. So I think probably with a childhood friend, like if they were going through something. I don't have like a specific example, but I think I've always been like a helper to some degree. Like I really like to like solve problems. So
I can relate.
Yeah. I don't know if you need a more specific example, but
no, that's fine.
Yeah, that works.
I was going to joke. I can relate, and Chris can back that up.
Yeah, I've gotten better because sometimes people just need the empathy, if you will. And I'm like, okay, noted. This is not like...
Right. Yeah.
Plan. Sometimes people just want the answer of, yeah, that is terrible. I feel with you. Not just like, well, you can do this, and this.
Yeah.
I continually try to remind myself to practice the asking the question first of, okay, what kind of response do you want from me?
Right. Like, so do you want this actually solved or do you just want like, you know, reassurance?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because like, if they just want the emotional support, I'm like, wait, that actually helps though? But I'm like, okay, yeah. People have done
temporarily.
Yeah. Did you participate in Halloween as a kid?
Yeah. I did, yes. I was very competitive about filling the pillowcase to the top.
Awesome.
I would not go home until it was like totally full. Like my MO was like just about getting the candy. Like I kind of cared about the costumes, but I was like, I had like a whole layout of like the neighborhoods and everything and start off with like the rich ones that give the full size candy bars. So
okay. You had a plan.
I'm very like a driven Capricorn here. So from a young age, that was tried and true.
Mm. So normally about with Halloween, we like to ask if you had a favorite costume or a least favorite costume, but you kind of sidestepped that by saying you didn't even really care about the costume.
My favorite costume was I was Catwoman in kindergarten.
That's a fun one.
Okay.
I was obsessed with Michelle Pfeiffer and Batman Returns. And, you know, I'd go to school and they're like, are you Batman? I was like, no. They were like, are you Catman? I was like, no, I'm Catwoman. Like, get it right.
Probably not an option because school, but did you have the whip?
No, I didn't have the whip, but my mom
had they would let you bring outfit, that.
And it was really cool. And yeah, I took gymnastics because I was inspired by Xena, Michelle Pfeiffer and Catwoman and Buffy the Vampire Slayer and the Pink Power Ranger. So the women that built me.
So, right.
But yeah, that was probably my favorite costume for sure.
Okay. So you have a least favorite costume.
I think I dressed as Michael Jackson the year before he was accused of all the things that he did.
Oh, no. Normally that would be a great costume, but circumstances.
Yeah.
Just didn't age great, let's just say. But
yeah.
No, I didn't have one that I like absolutely hated, I would say.
Okay.
I think I was a Power Ranger one year, and I think the costume didn't land right, so that was probably like one of my least favorites that I did.
That is a common thing, yeah. Either ones that you know, something about it either was like, some people have said I didn't like the costumes, they were cheap, or sometimes they tried something and it didn't work, or you know, the costume failed or fell apart, or you know, things like that. That's pretty common.
Yep. Not so much the costume,
last year I was Patrick Bateman from American Psycho, and that was fun. And I also, from one of my short films, I have this like bloody torso. So I just like carried around with me.
Nice. Are you Patrick Bateman with or without the raincoat?
With the headphones. I was covered in blood.
Yes.
I had the torso. It was fun.
Nice. Very nice.
Rolling into teenagers. Is there anything that really stood out to you in terms of media during your teenage years?
I think I was just obsessed with pop culture. I loved like TRL and MTV and Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Saturday Night Live, Mad TV. I loved music videos. I loved everything about like the 90s Y2K aesthetic. I loved pop music.
Frosted Tips.
Yeah, like I loved like the bubblegum nature of the late 90s, but that even translated into horror. Like some of my favorite horror movies to this day are still like Scream, I Know What You Did Last Summer, Urban Legend, Valentine. Like I love those kind of like, you know, fluffy 90s slashers, if you will. I think I just was like a huge consumer of pop culture across like all formats in my teen years.
Was there something in particular you think you like what's the word, like a common thread about the kind of pop culture stuff you liked? Popularity in general?
I think the things that I really liked, again, like all kind of had that gloss to it.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, I loved music or books or movies that it was all kind of escapism to some degree.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. The less realistic it is, the more of an escape it is.
Yeah. So, you know, not like fantasy per se, but yeah. I think it was all kind of like glossy bubblegum, like, and I think like during my teenage years, they were like pretty tumultuous. So that for me was like a nice escape in some regard. It was almost like a safe haven. So I found like, you know, a safety net in pop culture, I think, growing up.
Understandable.
Yeah.
Let's see. Anything in particular stand out to you from Buffy the Vampire Slayer?
I mean, it's my favorite television show of all time. I think I loved everything about it. I loved that they would go to the Bronze and eat like a croissant on a Tuesday night. Like that club was so random. I loved all the fashion choices. I loved that she was almost coded for being like, you know, when you're the chosen one and you have to keep it a secret, it's like anyone who's queer can kind of relate to that topic. I thought it was scary at times. It was funny at times. It's really witty. So I think all the characters almost felt like they became my friends. You're like part of the Scooby-Doo gang in a way. Yeah. So I really like the show because of those reasons.
That's an interesting angle that I hadn't thought about it. Scooby-Doo gang, but queer coded.
Yeah. I really felt like I was part of the group. And I think at that time in particular, like definitely in like middle school, I didn't really have many friends. I think I made most of my friends like ninth or 10th grade. So I think shows like that kind of gave me companionship and like really made me feel like seen and validated in a lot of ways.
Which is even more important if you're closeted at the time.
Yeah.
Let's see. Anything in particular stand out to you about Scream?
I mean, it's one of my favorites. It's such a classic. I think they found the right balance of comedy and horror that a lot of other films miss. They either over-index on the comedy or they over-index on the horror. So I think he just created this like magical composition that is like so hard to replicate. And I think the chase scenes are amazing. And obviously like killing one of the main, who you think is the main character in the opening sequence was such a game changer.
Yeah.
It's just such a smooth ride. Like I think of, you know, when you're feeling sick and you pull up your covers, it's like, what movies do you want to watch again and again and again? And like, I could watch that movie 100 times and never get sick of it. And as a filmmaker, I think about that too. It's like, I don't want to make a traumatizing film that's draining. I want to make a comfort film that you'll watch when you're not feeling well. You know, like how do you create those films that kind of like stand the test of time and like people love and will rewatch over and over again?
So what you're kind of gearing towards here is something that also comes up a lot in our interviews, which is, it sounds like this particular movie, at least, is less about themes and more about the artistry, the auteur.
Yeah, I think for me, it's like, it's such nuanced details. Like, it could be like when Neve Campbell like falls out of the window and her hair gets caught in her mouth and she like whips her hair. And like, it's like that scene lives rent free in my brain or like, it's just certain.
Why that scene?
I don't know, because it's choreographed so beautifully and it's like, and it feels like there's like moments that feel like music video components again. Like I think in such like a pop culture lens that like, I love like certain,
so going back to the gloss.
Like it's all about like aesthetic to me, I think. So for me, there's like so many moments in that movie that's just perfect aesthetics in so many ways.
Okay. What'd you like about I Know What You Did Last Summer?
It's the chase sequence with Sarah Michelle Gellar is like, in my opinion, one of the best chase sequences of all time. And I thought I was always kind of like alone in that opinion. But then as the new film came out, you know, on social, I'm seeing like a lot of commentary about that. So it kind of affirms like that moment from the time she's witnessing Ryan Phillippe getting murdered and is in the cop car to the moment that she dies. Like, they don't make chase scenes like that anymore. I mean, that was like, what, 6, 7, 8 minutes long, and it just kept going and going, and it was so good, and you like thought she was gonna make it and then she doesn't. And I think everybody in the movie is just like really sexy at the same time, and like, I don't know, like it almost felt like if you could like turn 90s pop culture into a horror movie, you would get I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Yeah.
Like it was such an easy watch. And I really appreciated in a weird way that they didn't rely on gore to like make an effective horror movie or thriller.
Right.
Like I actually like am more into like the chase sequences, the fashion, the characters, like the suspense than the gore per se. Like, I don't think you need gore to make like an effectively scary film always.
You don't necessarily. There's actually not a lot of gore in Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It's just all about the theme, the feel.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Did you have any recurring nightmares or scary dreams as a teen?
Not really, to be honest. Nothing that comes to mind. Huh. Yeah.
Right. Not every question is going to land. Just never know.
I do vividly dream every night, and I remember my dreams, typically.
Lucky.
Yeah, so that to me is interesting. Like I've always had like really specific dreams, and they're so weird too. Like they're always really random.
During your teens, was there a time in your real life that something scared you? Again, not every question is going to land. So if not, that's fine.
Yeah. That's a pretty specific one.
I mean, no. Yeah, maybe, but like more like traumatic family things, nothing that's like fun in a podcast. Right. Yeah, nothing that's that I think would make sense for this one.
Okay. Yeah. Flipping that question around, was there ever a time in your teens when you felt exceptionally calm or safe or bliss?
Yeah, I mean, I think always with movies, like going to the movies, being in a video store, watching movies, it was like film was always my safety net, or reading a good book. And then I think as like high school came around, definitely like I felt that with like my group of friends. I think my friends became my family, and they were very much my safety net and there for me. So I think it was like a combination between, you know, what used to be my safety net in my childhood and also my new safety net, which was my group of friends that are still my friends to this day, which is really nice.
Awesome.
Found family.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right, rolling into adult years. Any particular media stand out to you from your adult years?
This is where the list gets longer.
Yes. Usually, because we're adults for longer.
Yeah, that's a long list. At this big old age, I've been an adult for a long time. I mean, I'm a big slasher fan in general, so I think... Like, this was maybe, like, the beginning of high school, but, like, I loved House of Wax. I loved The First Strangers. It Follows is amazing. I loved Malignant. I think recently, like, Barbarian and Talk to Me were great.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing I've appreciated about horror is just its evolution. I think it used to be very much for one community or one demographic, and I think it's really opened to different groups and backgrounds and races and ethnicities and genders and sexualities. And I think like seeing how a different country creates horror, or seeing like what does horror look like through the queer lens, like that to me is really interesting. And I think it's beautiful that it's becoming more encompassing of different groups. Because I think obviously back in the day, it was like not that at all.
Yeah.
So I'm interested to see like where that continues to grow, and to like to know that there's like room for all these stories essentially.
Yeah. I think basically digital photography in general, and you know, the ease of digital video has really opened a lot of doors, particularly in the last 20 years that, you know, how can I say this? Usually technology gets cheaper as you go along. The accessibility of that kind of technology that we have today is light years ahead of where that was, you know, 20 years ago in terms of accessibility. Everybody's got a camera in their phone now.
100%. Yeah. And also you're seeing filmmakers make full films on an iPhone. Like, I mean, Sean Baker did that with Tangerine back in the day. And It's like, you can do that. You know, the technology is like strong enough that if you don't have accessibility to other equipment, like that would work. So.
Right. And so this democratization of accessibility is really opening all kinds of doors now that, you know, previously it was, you know, only the people who could have access to the tech needed to make a movie like Psycho.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you only had Psycho because that's, you had limited access to the equipment, and now everybody's got access and boom, doors are opening.
Not only that, but like finding your tribe or your community.
That online. Too. Yes.
Like, right. Yeah. Back in the day, back in the day, like I couldn't find other people that were into horror movies, but now it's like you could find community everywhere, you know, like on social media, on Reddit, on Discord, etc. Like, there's ways to find people that like have the same interests as you, where you could probably hone in and grow those quicker. Because I think for a long time there was like a stigma or a shame around liking these things, and I didn't like incorporate it into my identity until like a lot later in life, where I stopped like caring as much. I think like I was always a fan of horror, but I didn't like wear it on my chest. You know, I was always like, oh, people are gonna think I'm weird. So I think for a long time I was like quiet about it. It's like I almost came out of the closet for being a horror fan. So two times coming out of the closet.
Right.
Aaron.
But
Yeah, there's that too. The internet has, you know, democratized that as well. You know, what used to be, you know, if you lived in a city with 100,000 people, you might have 100 people that would consider themselves diehard horror fans. But now you go online where you've got, you know, a couple billion people connected, you know, you can find millions of people.
It validates you, you know, like you don't feel like you're weird or an outcast or whatever, because it's like suddenly you're being connected to an algorithm that's showing all these other people that love the same things that you love. So
that's why I love going to horror conventions. It's just, you know, my people.
Yep.
Yeah.
Let's see. House of Wax. What'd you like about House of Wax?
I love that
Paris Hilton's death.
not even her death, because I know that she later found that like problematic, and I understand where she was coming from, but like her being in the movie, I thought was really like buzzy stunt casting. I loved the whole cast. I love the rock music, that like the soundtrack is so good, and I'm a big rock music fan, so like I think all of the music they incorporated into it. And I loved like the grand finale when the giant house just like melts. And I mean, it's such a good budget. Like, they got so lucky to be able to do all of that. And even just like, you know, when like the face gets ripped off and you can see the skeleton underneath, like there's so many creepy moments in the film. It's such a good movie, I think. And I think it's severely underrated.
Agreed. I love it. Like, yeah, so many people trash it because it's not the original, but it on its own is a great film.
It captures early 2000 culture so well. Like, I think of like Hot Topic, MySpace, T-Mobile Sidekicks, like all this stuff. And Paris Hilton literally uses one in that movie. Like, it's such a early 2000s movie. And it I think she's even wearing like a juicy jumpsuit in it. Even that is such like a moment in time. So,
So one of the things that we found is, you know, we talked about a little earlier about, you know, the auteur side versus the emotional side. Were there any media that stood out to you from your adult years that really like hit you in the gut in terms of emotional impact?
Yeah. I mean, I think again, like I like escapism. So I would say like the movies that hit me on that level, I probably will watch like once or twice and be like, I love it, but I can't stomach this watch it again. So I think for me, like Hereditary probably is a really good one, where it's about just like family trauma and grief. And like, it's so visceral. Like, I can like feel the pain of those characters when I watch that movie. And I think Toni Collette should have been not only nominated for an Oscar that year. Like, I can't even believe she wasn't.
Should have got all of them.
Like, that movie, I can probably watch like once every 5 years, but I love it. You know, and I think that movie made me really think about like my own experiences with like family and trauma and like grief growing up. And so that would probably be like the example for sure.
Steve would agree. It was a tough film to watch. I dragged him and a bunch of friends to the theater, and at the end he was like,
it's funny you keep saying that, because I keep reminding you that I did not watch that one with you.
Really?
Yes.
Was it Was it Midsommar?
Yes, I saw Midsommar with you, not Hereditary.
Yeah, okay, okay. Well, I rescind all former references to that, and I apologize to you, sir. So I did have friends that went with me, and afterwards they were like, what was with the naked people? Why did you drag me to this movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we need to stop using old naked people as a mechanism.
Agreed.
Kind of ages them a little bit. I don't know.
Yeah, a little bit. You know, like they make that look horrific when that should be the case. Yeah, I agree. A little bit.
Yeah. Let's see. Halloween as an adult.
Nice.
Favorite costume? Least favorite costume? Do you dress up as an adult?
I'll occasionally dress up as an adult. Yeah. I think favorite costume was definitely.
You're still trying to get all the candy?
No. Like tackling kids, I'm like, get out of the way, kid. no more retreating. But I do always, I do have a tradition now where I throw like a Halloween party once a year, and yeah. I'll like curate some type of like horror category, subcategory. So last year we did 80s werewolf films. Okay. So we watched The Howling, In the Company of Wolves, and An American Werewolf in London. It was like a whole kind of like movie night. And I give like time blocks and I'm like, drop in when you want. It's going to go from like 8 to 2 kind of deal.
Catch the 10 p.m. showing.
Yeah. So like as Halloween's getting closer, I'm starting to think, I think this year I'm going to do underrated sequels because I recently watched Psycho 2 and I loved it. It was so, I've seen it before, but like, rewatching it, I was like, oh, this is like such an enjoyable like popcorn horror movie. Like that's actually the kind of movie where I would like let my kids watch it when they were like maybe 10 to 12. Like it's not super bloody. It's kind of spooky and it's just like fun. So I don't know. Like I don't know if you've watched it recently, but I would highly recommend going back to that.
I haven't watched it recently.
Yeah, it needs a rewatch. Hey, we should schedule it on the Saturday Movie Nights.
Maybe if we can find a copy of it, yeah.
Yeah. But to go back to your question, yeah, favorite would be Patrick Bateman.
Oh, that's right.
Least favorite? I'm trying to think of my costumes. Oh, okay. So me and my friend dressed up as Sheila and the Bhagwan from Wild Wild Country. The documentary on Netflix about like a cult in the 80s in Oregon, and they like poisoned a whole town and whatever, and like no one understood what we were. We went to this party and like we just looked ridiculous, like we looked insane, and I think everybody was like, what are you, and it was such like
and then you have the moment of explaining it where it's like you get to tell them about this cool thing, but then it's kind of a weird dark story, so you're just like, yeah, it's this thing, and you're probably just left with them like, oh, cool. Yeah.
And the party I went to, they were really normal people. Like,
oh, no.
Like, it was a bunch of like coworkers I used to work with, and they're very like run of the mill kind of people. So, I don't think they appreciated it. Like, it just, no, it didn't land with anybody, and everybody just thought we were weird. So, but I can look back and laugh at that now, at least.
Yeah. It's fun in retrospect.
Let's see. So you mentioned that you do have scary dreams as an adult and you do remember them. Any particularly stand out?
Well, I have that thing where you like wake up and you see a spider landing on you.
Okay.
Like I think people typically either see a giant spider or a person at the edge of their bed. And I'm like, thank God I got the whatever.
Right.
Spider, because like, I would hate to wake up and think someone's at my bed. Like that would creep me out way more. So I welcome the spider. I've like named him. His name's Harry. And I also sometimes wake up and like don't know where I am for a second. I read about it. There's like a terminology. I don't have like a weird disease. It's actually quite normal apparently, but you like for 30 seconds don't know who you are. You don't know where you are. And it's like really, really jarring and disorienting. Like it takes a second for your brain to like remember and figure it out. So it happens to me probably like once every 6 months. And I hate when it happens. Like it's so strange. Like you really feel like you're like, wait, who am I? What's happening? Like where am I? Like, you literally don't know anything. Mm. And that can be very like terrifying in the moment.
Right.
Otherwise, like dreams, there's nothing that's like reoccurring that stands out as a theme. Like the other night I dreamt that I had like giant holes in my body and I had to lay down so like the blood wouldn't come out.
Okay.
So I just like would lay down and like I would see the blood like pool at the like the center of the hole. So like I have really weird dreams like that all the time.
Yeah. Weird. And you mentioned earlier vivid. That is vivid. Like it's just such odd
there
detail.
Were, like, 9 holes and they're huge. I also dream that my teeth fall out a lot.
Yeah.
That's common. That's like a I think like if you have
powerless.
Like a full fear mm-hmm. or like control obsession, which I definitely do. But then sometimes my dreams are fun. Like I was in a school bus and it started filling up with water and then like all these fish were dancing and we were all like in a bus underwater. So
yeah.
I don't know. You know, like every night I go to bed, I'm just like, I don't know what I'm going to get tonight.
Right. It's funny too, because the school bus one sounds like it's going to be terrifying at first. Like you're locked in a vehicle and it's filling with water, but no, your brain's like fun time, fish.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like we were dancing, we could breathe underwater. It felt like magic.
Octopus's water. Garden. the holes in the body one, that one makes me think of potentially feeling like you're giving too much of yourself away.
Interesting.
You had to lay down so all the blood wouldn't come out.
It literally happened 2 days ago. So, and I remember being like I would try to sit up and the blood would spill out and I was like, oh, I have to like lay down. Like I was so pragmatic mm-hmm. about it. I was like, yeah, I have all these holes in me and I have to lay down so the blood doesn't come out.
Right.
It didn't like occur to me that like, why do you have these holes? Like this mm-hmm. was strange. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just factual.
I was going to ask at first if you had like, I don't know, read any Junji Ito recently, because there's a story he does about people that randomly spontaneously start getting holes, but no, that sounds more like something else. Like, I don't know, delicate balance of something. Like you can't tip it.
Yeah,
that's what I mean. Taking care of myself versus taking care of others.
Yeah.
Or kind of like knowing where you put your time and energy. Like I think I'm starting a new job soon that's on the corporate side. And I think every time I do start a new corporate job, I worry that the time and investment that would go into that would take away from film. Mm-hmm. So it's like trying to feel like I have to balance myself in multiple ways where I like don't drop the ball on one of them.
Right.
That could be it too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Have you been terrified of something in real life as an adult?
I mean, recently I watched that like Idaho murder documentary and I have not, like I've been nervous the last couple nights, like after watching that, like I don't know. It felt so, it is so real. Like it just felt, I think when you have like new true crime situations that are like rooted with social media and there's so much of it, it just makes it so much more visceral. Yeah. So I think like lately I'm almost just like, I think my fear is just what human beings are capable of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Understandable.
And like when you have social media and all this, like you have so much more access to information like that and it can seem really overwhelming. So I would say probably like the fear of like what humans are capable of for sure.
Very common for adult years. Yeah.
Yeah.
Has there been a time in your adult life when you felt exceptionally calm or safe or at bliss?
I mean, it's still literally the same. It's like still the movies, still the books.
I kind of thought you might say so.
Yep.
Yeah. Like there's nothing I love better than like going alone to a movie on like a Sunday matinee or like a Monday night and just being tucked away and like watching the previews and watching the movie. And I don't know, like I love going to the movie theater. And I think also going to like a theater, like New Bev Cinema or Brain Dead in LA, like where they're playing an older movie that everybody's a fan of and everyone's reacting the same way. I think being a part of that community also feels really safe and comforting as well.
Yeah. Do you remember the last person you hurt?
The last person I hurt. Oof. I'm known to be the friend that gives like really tough feedback. Mm-hmm. So like, I'm going to tell you all the things that you don't want to hear, but like my love language is like, I'm telling you this because I care about you. Like if I didn't care, I wouldn't say these things. Mm-hmm. So I was delivering some really hard to hear feedback to a friend, and I think they were, it hurt them, but I think it was better to say it than to not say it. And I think we're like working through it currently. So yeah,
can relate.
But I've definitely made a lot of people cry. And it's not, it's not to be mean, and it's not on purpose, but I've learned. I used to be like, oh, is there something wrong with me? Like, should I change who I am? But I've realized some people just like don't like friendships where there's accountability, or where there's like transparent honesty, or where you have to like really work through things to like fix it. And some of those people have like dipped out, and I'm okay with that. I think I'm realizing like, no, this is just who I am, tried and true. It's not going to change. I like this about me, and either you're for it or you're not for it. It's kind of like a take it or leave it at this point. So,
well, yeah, it's like you were saying earlier, the, you know, where your habit, but your intuition is to fix the problem, where sometimes you may want have a friend who just wants to hear the reassuring, consoling thing. You're like, no, you're doing this wrong. You need to fix it this way.
Yeah. And like, I would never want yes people in my corner. I would always
kind of counterintuitive.
Hold me accountable. Yeah.
Well, normally the follow-up question to that is, do you remember the last person you helped? But in your case,
sounds like they're kind of two in the, one in the
same.
Would
be, exactly. It would be both, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Something is hurting.
Yeah. It's tough luck.
Yeah. So next question, do you remember, or, and this is over your entire life and not just the horror genre, could be any movie. Mm-hmm. What movie would you say you have watched more times than any other?
Like any movie of all time?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Ooh, I mean, definitely Scream and I Know What You Did Last Summer and House of Wax are really high up there, and Halloween and Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Outside of horror, I would say probably Jawbreaker, Cruel Intentions, The Faculty, Bring It On, and The Devil Wears Prada, for sure.
Okay.
Like anytime The Devil Wears Prada is on, I will like sit down and watch it. And it's such a comfort movie for me. I just love it. And I'm so excited for the sequel. And I love Freaky Friday too. So like, again, you can see a through line in all the movies I love.
Yeah.
Well, actually, so I'm not familiar with Jawbreaker. So I was going to ask you to describe what you like about that. Oh,
it's amazing. It's from 99. It premiered at Sundance in 1999. It's directed by Darren Stein, who is now a friend of mine, and I adore him immensely.
Oh, cool.
It has Rose McGowan, Pam Grier, like such a stacked cast. And it's basically about a group of girlfriends who kidnap each other on their birthday and do a prank. So they kidnap their girlfriend and they gag her with a jawbreaker. But when they open the trunk to like go tie her to the flagpost, she swallowed it and she died. Uh-oh. And now it's all about them covering up the murder. So it's very much like a dark comedy, I would say.
Yeah.
But the music, the outfits, it's so like everything I love about film and cinema. It's like it all feels like a music video at times. Like you have the slow motion hallway walking scenes, you have like every, like it's just, it's hilarious, it's dark, it's edgy. I've probably seen that movie like 100 times. And they recently did a screening of it at the Academy in LA, like the Academy Museum. And it was so cool to see the film finally get some of the recognition that I think it's like deserved for a really long time. So I'm seeing this uptick in like people discovering it, rediscovering it. And I think Darren deserves his flowers for that movie, because it's just like a pure stroke of genius.
Mm.
Yeah.
So we've talked about a number of different movies here. And normally the reason that we ask that question is because it either underscores something that you've already shared or highlights something new that we haven't talked about and gives us a chance to talk about that. Mm-hmm. In this case, it underscored something that you had already shared on. And pretty much all of the movies that we've talked about so far fit into one of two sort of common themes. If we were to ask what your favorite movie is it any of the ones that we've already mentioned, or is there like a different one that you would say, you know, we haven't talked about this one, but I would put it above all the others?
I mean, one, I'll say my Letterboxd top four is I Know What You Did Last Summer, Scream 2, Death Becomes Her, and Cruel Intentions.
Okay.
So like Scream 2 to me is an amazing film. I think it's almost better than Scream sometimes. Like I go back, they feel like siblings. Like I go back and forth, but I love them both. And I love Death Becomes Her. I think that movie is just such like
timeless classic.
So it's so timeless. It's so quintessential LA. Like I love like anything that takes place in Beverly Hills in the early 90s. I'm obsessed with the aesthetic of it. Like I just love it. Or even the 80s as well. And yeah, like Cruel Intentions is so good. The humor is amazing. I mean, some parts of it have not aged well. I will acknowledge that. But that being said, like the whole movie as a whole is still just like such a comfort film for me. So, yeah.
Do you see any common threads about what kinds of horror you like? Cannibalism, occult, metaphysical, supernatural?
I definitely love slashers, and I definitely love psychological horror, like The Shining, Rosemary's Baby, and I love monster movies. Like again, like The Thing, Society, The Blob. Like those are some of my favorites as well. So. I think slashers, monster films, and psychological horror are probably like my top three.
Okay.
Yeah, the one I don't identify with the most is probably zombie films. I like them, but like, and I'll still go watch them, but it's probably the genre that I think I'm like least enthusiastic about within the horror space. Why do you do you love zombie?
No, I was just looking at the like so psychological slashers and monsters. I see sort of again two common threads with those, and I guess this is sort of the point where we would talk about this stuff anyway. So, like I mentioned at the start of the interview, so we'll talk about common threads that keep cropping up, and then maybe talk about how horror as a genre, you know, intersects with these topics. Mm-hmm. For you, I think, you know, it sounds like the trigger had to do with some of the family stuff that we didn't get into, which is understandable. But both of those, that pushes you towards sort of two things, empowerment and escapism. Mm-hmm. You know, you talked about a number of different things in terms of the escapism, in terms of spectacle, grand finale, pop culture, bubblegum, the gloss, you know, all that kind of stuff. But also an element of empowerment, Buffy, Xena, Pink Power Ranger, gymnastics, even Catwoman to a degree, but also the slashers and the monsters kind of fit under empowerment a bit.
Yeah.
And
you have your final girl, right? Like in a lot of these movies, or you have the characters that fight back and ultimately prevail. So right. I think a through line in slashers is definitely like, you know, the empowerism to some degree.
Definitely. Right. Yeah.
And you mentioned the psychological side of the subgenre, you know, that possibly ties back to the family trauma stuff of trying to understand why do people do the things that they do, which is also kind of related to Hereditary and some of the other places where that cropped up in the interview. So, you know, I guess the first question is, do you think these are is an accurate summary of the most important things to you in horror? And if not, would there be something that you, how can I say this? Really struggling with my words today for some reason. is there something that you would say, okay, it's, you know, maybe slightly off the mark, here's what I would tweak? Or
I think that they're right on, like you hit the nail on the head. Like when you're saying this, I'm definitely like, yeah, that makes sense. Especially escapism, definitely the empowerment. And yeah, I think like, I like the psychological horror. It's like a dash of that. Mm-hmm. Where I really want to process, because like, you know, there's like themes of like addiction on certain parts of my family or other things. So I see a lot of these like family trauma themes in horror movies. And I do think that that's an interesting way to kind of like process and reflect your own experiences. So
that reminds me of something else I wanted to say. There's also like a sort of a push pull with you because you mentioned some of the tumultuous stuff in the family, but you've also got your grandmother who introduced you to the horror genre. So,
yeah,
you know, again, push pull.
Normally that's a cinematic effect.
Well, that too. normally the follow-up question would be, why is this stuff important to you? I think we already kind of touched on that. So then the follow-up question is, why horror? Couldn't you touch on some of these things in other genres?
Yeah, and I think I do. Like, I think I still love a lot of films that fall outside of the horror genre for the same reasons, mm-hmm. like all the ones that I had mentioned prior. But I do think there is something really comforting in horror where it's like, with a slasher film, typically, there's such like a tried and true formula. And I think I love, my favorite part of a horror movie is actually like the first act. It's always like, how are you going to set this up? How is it going to be different? What are you going to do that's going to surprise me? So I love like seeing how they take a tried and true formula and make it their own. Mm-hmm. And I think there's something comforting about like knowing the layout and knowing how it's going to go. Like, you know, everyone's like happy on a road trip. You're like, you know, it's not going to stay happy. It's not like a feel good movie. So I think for me, it's like there's weirdly comfort in like knowing what to anticipate. Yeah.
Control.
I guess. Yeah. I am a person that like really thrives on like control. So within my own life. And I think like those films give that peace of mind in a way, which is strange to say, but
not uncommon. We have interviewed over 130 people by now, and we're definitely starting to see some trends, and you have plenty of company in that bucket. All right. Well, I think we got a pretty good summary for you. I guess the last question really is, do you think there's anything that you thought of early in the conversation that you didn't get a chance to say? Maybe like the conversation took a left turn?
No, I don't think so. I thought this was really cool. I enjoyed like kind of analyzing why I like the things I like and why I may not like certain things. I don't think I've ever reflected on how I consume and what I consume and why. So. Mm-hmm. I think that was like an interesting exercise, and that's a really cool podcast angle. Like, I think that's awesome. Yeah. So thank you for having me.
Our pleasure. It's also interesting that, you know, there's a lot of times I'll go online and I'll see people posting things like, you know, here are some movies I liked. What else do you think I would like? And I kind of chuckled to myself because I think the real question people need to ask is not, you know, here are things that I like, what else would I like? But, you know, what am I afraid of? You know, if you're asking for things that are going to scare you, well, the question is, then what are you afraid of?
And it's not what do I like, it's what do you not like.
Right. Yeah. Actually, one thing I would like to talk about is how media companies approach recommendations.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I don't think they get it. Mm-hmm. Like, I think they use a lot of technology to create recommendations sometimes. And they're like, oh, because you watched Cruel Intentions, you're going to love anything with this actor. Yeah. Or you're going to love anything that's like romantic.
They're not getting to the themes.
Yeah. Whereas like you really have to understand the nuances of like why you like something. Like all the things we've been talking about, it's like I may love, you know, Freaky Friday for the same reason that I love Scream. There's no overlap in genre. There's no overlap in talent, but there is an overlap in like why those two movies are linked to each other. They're both.
And not only that, but two different people can watch the same movie and have two different reasons why they like that movie.
Correct. Mm-hmm. So I think there needs to be more of a nuanced approach in how companies approach recommendations. I think they miss the mark too much because of that. Mm-hmm.
We'd be happy to help.
Yeah.
if you know anybody who's looking for information on that, send them our way.
Yeah.
But that would be one random thought I have. I don't know where that would go into this, but I think like this conversation makes me realize like it's a lot more complicated than just like an overlap of genre or talent. So
No, it's much more personal. Yeah, I'm actually in the process of writing a book to summarize like the first 5 years. We've just recently celebrated our fifth anniversary. And if we can do 10, then hopefully I'll write a second book and say, you know, here's what we mapped out at the first 5 years. And did that pan out and, you know, or did it change or what have you? So,
very cool.
Got a lot of interesting stuff to talk about. Mm-hmm. Well, again, before we hit the closing, do you want to let people know what you're currently working on? By the way, we will put together a bio page for you and link to whatever you like to link to. So you don't have to worry about giving, you know, links and all that kind of stuff. We'll just tell people how to find you on our page.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I have a short film called Slasher And that actually will be premiering soon on Shudder, and you can watch it there. And then I also have a TV series called Subliminal, which I was one of the directors on. That's coming out later in 2025. And I'll be working on my next short film, which will be announced shortly. So I'm in the process of working on that.
That's awesome.
Cool. Yeah. So for anybody out there listening, if you want to find out more about what Amir is working on, you just go to horrormakesushappy.com, go to the episodes page and look for Amir and click on that. And that'll take you to a link where we'll have his bio and links to whatever it is he wants us to link to. And in the meantime, tell a friend.